and we may not.
It's not on.
Hear it coming out
That might have just been me. Is this one better?
Yeah.
Is that coming? Because I can't really hear it, but. So sorry about that for people that were listening and not able to hear. It would have been great if we had some sort of interpretation services here in the silence. I'll run through it really quickly. In the memo, there's a copy of the language access plan, which is in draft, and some information related to interpretation. If you have comments on that, please get a hold of me, Michael Jones, or Lindsay Stickles in my office, and we will be happy to incorporate comments and discuss making amendments to the plan. But this meeting is mostly about implementation. So there's different varieties of ways that you can translate documents or spoken word into languages different than English or into media other than spoken out loud words. So the first thing that we're really launching is interpretation services. And that's what the primary focus is at this point, but we do want to get some other feedback, and I want to give people a sense of sort of where some of the other things are headed. The interpretation services, the plan is to expand a contract that's already being used by the Sheriff's Office, Health Department, and Human Services. And those are, that's with a company called Language Line Solutions, and it's there, as you can probably guess, telephonic interpretation. The Lindsay's been reaching out to various departments and asking for input on, first of all, do you need the hardware associated with the services? And if so, how much of the hardware you need for different locations?
Christina, can you hear Michael okay now? Because I want to make sure he's beginning to ask the questions that will come back. Perfect, Christina.
Okay, good.
Sorry.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Usually people don't have a problem hearing me, but I appreciate it. So first of all, the way that it works is pretty simple. It's call a 1-800 number and you get connected to a person who does the translation services. So what's required for that is a phone with two handsets, because the person speaking the English, let's say, and trying to provide services needs to be heard by the translator. And then the interpreter needs to speak that in a foreign language for the other person. And it's really important that the translator hears everything to be able to do it effectively. So we don't have those phones just on every counter. So this is the first step, is getting those phones. Right now we're looking at cordless ones, but there are some advantages to the wired ones because they have buttons that simplify it, like speed dial and that kind of thing. Whereas the other phones are more of just an out of the box. So at first we were probably going to go with the cordless ones because they're more flexible and you don't have the wires over counters and things like that, but there probably are instances where the wired one is better. So Lindsay, we have 18 requests, right?
Uh-huh. That's what I reached out each department and asked them if they needed it, and so how many. My initial number was 18.
Okay. And so we're going to send out to all the departments and offices, this is what we have planned for you. This is the feedback. And it may be zero because some places said we don't do anything that requires that. But we'll let people know. One or two is typically what we have. My recommendation is that if you have a conference room in your space, that you have one in the conference room, because that's a likely spot where you might go for a private conversation and then suddenly you're without the service, right? And somebody moves someone away from the counter. We're not expecting that you would have them in like every single office, so that we get a request from somebody for like 15, that'll be like red flag. Well, we don't need them that much. You need to move people, not have a phone in every location. So we're assuming at a minimum it's at service counters, and then probably you may have other locations where you might need them. I'm planning on us getting one for room 116 over in the building across the street. Room 101 is in the process of changing into the law library, so it wouldn't get one, or it might get one if the law library services want one, but it wouldn't get one as a conference room. I'm kind of thinking we don't need one in this room, so I'd be curious to start there with conversations on other rooms that I might not be aware of. The only ones that I can really think of are over in the law and justice building. It's like 131 or something like that. Is that the room number? And then this room, I don't know that we really need them in this location. Oh, does anyone think we need one in 131? In their office. So anyone have a conference room that's a public kind of conference room where there probably should be one? How about the Camino, the big room over in Camino? Great point. I didn't think of that. So yeah, I think that there should probably be one here. But that'll be in their department. I'm assuming everybody, if you have a conference room in your department, for example, in your offices, there's a conference room. If you think there should be one there, Jennifer should be telling us there should be one there. But I'm thinking more of the public conference rooms that are not really assigned or in someone's office space.
Okay, one might want to talk to the sheriff's office. I know their detectives are downstairs there. That might be more convenient than going upstairs for their conference room.
Okay. Right. So can you make a note of that, please?
We're still using it. John Stevens there.
Bring me there. I might already have it on your list, but that public works planning conference room would be nice just because it's off from the front table, front desk. And so if you need a private conversation, we often take citizens or applicants back there.
People most use the meeting room from Honest Team.
Okay, so we'll check with the sheriff about 131 when we'll have one in all of those other places that we talked about.
Are road chaps asking from the students?
I haven't heard anything.
So that's kind of it from that perspective. Again, when you get the here's the count that we have for your office, that would be, I'm going to be kind of clear about that, would be all your locations, right? So Sean, for example, if you're getting that email, this is what we have for your office or your department, that is all of the places where you provide services. If it's going to planning or public works, it's the Camino location and the Coopville location. So think that through. There's not somebody, you sit over here in Whidbey, there's not someone in Camino getting the same email asking about the public health spot in Camino. Yeah. So that's going to come around, kind of redoing the count. We would ask that we get, Lindsay will put in a deadline in there, but we're going to ask that we get a response back by July 7th, which is the end of next week, so that we have a sort of a number that we can get ordered. And we've ordered a sample of the portable and the wireless phones. So if you want to see them because you're curious about like what might work best in your situation, we should have those before the end of this week is our guess, right? If you don't have a big, you can state a preference of what you want without looking at them. You can also not really have a preference. And if you just say it's a front counter, we'll make a judgment call on what we think is the best in that situation. In conference rooms, I intend to just do the cordless ones because the rooms are so much changing. You'd want to be able to just pick it up off of a handset and not have a wire and that kind of thing. Plus they would have speakerphone. Right? The other ones probably have speakerphone too, but we're sure that the wireless ones do. The other piece to this is installation. So Lindsay's going to coordinate the installation with IT, and Lindsay's also going to come over and provide some training to staff when they're installed. So we'll be able to tell you this is when it's getting installed in your location, and please have at least one person who you trust to pass on the information to play the game of telephone with the other staff people to say, this is how this works. And this is because we're not going to try to train every single person. It's pretty basic stuff. Your staff should be able to pass on the knowledge, but we don't want to just dump, have this product arrive in your office and everyone be like, I don't even know how we use it, right? So you'll get that training. One of the pieces of the training is how you interpret, how you invite someone to use the service. And one of those things is the iSpeak card, and those are in the things that you were handed, that you were emailed. Lindsay has them.
They're umpteen styles we can choose from, and they're going to be laminated in someplace close to the front.
And basically, it's in all different languages. The person can point at the one that is the language they understand, and it has the English equivalent there, so that you can say that's when you get on the translation line, you're requesting that service. Mm-hmm. Any questions about that, about the interpretation part of this?
Yeah, what about telephonic communication with somebody that might need interpretation?
That's a great question. We will look into that. Do you know the answer?
When somebody calls in, we can put them on a three-way call and call this number, and we type in our code, and we would definitely need to figure out what language they speak. That's the only drawback. You won't have an iSpeak card, of course, or phone. But that's it.
Yeah. So that's there. Or you go.
Same cost, but
well, that, you know, you'll have to hardly read it.
Yes. It's
not
so the nice thing is some of these phones, this one here, the corded one, what the company recommends is putting a corded one where they're not going to walk away. So if you're not going to be someplace where you're going to watch the phones, they just recommended something that looks like this versus one you can just pick up and you'll put in the pocket and walk away. And this has pre-programmed number or languages right on the handsets.
So for those of you who are online, Sheila, I'm thinking of you. This is what was just shown is not something we can see from that's not online. So reach out to Lindsay and she'll come downstairs and show you what I think is pertinent or what I think she's recommending for like the front counter and the auditors. This is the kind of thing that I think you've been asking for. Lindsay has that and she can show you this. If there's other people online who want to see this, Lindsay can come over and show you, like Mary, I know at your front desk or when you're here. So Christina, yes, Christina. So all of them, I think having this, you can just ask and Lindsay will come over and show you what it looks like.
Couple days I'll have it. So
and then you can have it set up at your counters. Because that wired one I think is going to be the right thing. So
it's a little easier. It costs a little bit more, but it might be a little easier, more intuitive for people who maybe don't use it all the time.
Yep. And to Catherine's question, it's easier than I think with the wired phones to go, you know, have somebody
It's hard to see, but on here on the handset, they have the languages right there when you push the button on the handset. You don't have to dial any.
If you have someone calling in, though, that you would not use this phone if you have someone calling in. So that's not what that doesn't tie to Catherine's question.
Well, unless we have front facing public defense. And if that long public defense number was set up with that phone, then
use the microphone.
Answer with that phone. And then we have that second option available.
Oh, yeah, I guess that would be right. Yeah.
Basically, you don't need to call anybody. This goes directly to the company.
Yeah.
They already have it pre-programmed with our code. And it's awesome.
Yeah. So just to recap, you'll get an email saying how many we have already been told by your department you need. You verify that information or change that information, get it back to Lindsay. We'll want to know front counter versus other location. And if it's front counter location, we're assuming wired. If it's a conference room, we're assuming not wired, cordless. And if you want to see those different devices, we should have them before the end of the week. And you can come make arrangements with Lindsay to do that. We're still working on TTY, partly because none of us know much about it, really, and have much familiarity using it. So we're figuring out the information for that. But TTY, oftentimes people who utilize that because they're hearing impaired will have a device that they bring with them. And it's something that you interface with.
If it is helpful, I work with companies with disabilities, and the previous vice chair is breathing care. And he lives here, even though it's a statewide commission, he lives here in Miami County. And if that's helpful to you in figuring out the TTY, let me know, and I'll connect you to you.
I can tell you that Janine's been a great help, and she's got the phones now programmed so we can dial 9 and then the 711. We weren't able to do that before. So now as of this week, we can. And it is a service. There's also an app on the person's cell phone that typically most hearing impaired people use, is what we've been told. So you have to have a cell phone.
Okay. So that's all we're going to cover on TTY. Translation is a whole.
I would just add, I think it's super useful sometimes to find a user that uses it. That way you can have somebody that we're not trying to figure out what they're experiencing.
Right.
They know what they're experiencing.
Yeah. Testing it. Right. And we can definitely do that. Translation services are something else, and this is not a first phase rollout item. The first phase of translation, though, we expect to do later this year in fourth quarter, is what's described in the memo. We're planning to centralize that. So Kevin's the communication manager. The items that you want to have translated, written documents, we're going to have those be Kevin serve as a clearinghouse for those documents for a couple reasons. One is to manage the budget, because it could be very expensive and it could get very expensive very quickly. We have to have some kind of context for how much we're spending. To also evaluate usage. So to get a sense of, you know, some departments are not using it at all, and other departments are using it heavily, be able to track that a bit. And then part of that tracking is to start to maybe make some recommendations or to develop some level of consistency, because what we're going to be asking the departments to do is to identify what you consider to be priority or critical documents, the most, you know, the things that are most necessary in multiple languages. It's arguable that every single document we have should be in any language, and we'll touch on that in a minute. But the things that you think will be used frequently, applications, for example, or consent forms, or something that explains your tax bill, those kinds of things, we may want them on hand in multiple languages. And I should touch on what those languages would likely be. I'll do that in a second. Different departments may make very, very different interpretations of what is necessary. And we want to start to get some sense of consistency in regard to that. For example, we might have a department that's translating 2 documents and another department that's translating 350 documents. And it's like, wait, maybe you don't need to translate these. Maybe you're digging too deep. It's too much expenditure, the return, the bang for the buck. But we do have built into this the provision of translation on demand. So you might not translate, say, document X, but then someone comes in and says, I'd like to get this in Spanish. And they are able to essentially order that, and you would have that then translated into that language. It takes, depending on how long the document is, it might take a few days, but typically it's a pretty quick turnaround. So there is the option for that. So we want to kind of err on the side of less translation for cost control, but there is the availability of translating whatever's requested. The languages that we expect to translate to automatically for those documents you want to have on hand are Spanish and Tagalog, because those are the two languages that are most frequently reported from people who are not proficient in English. Those are the languages that they are proficient in. So if you said, I'd like this application translated, it's going to go into those two languages by default. But if you order one, it would be the language the person speaks, because let's say we have the applications translated into those two languages and someone comes in and says, I really need this in Japanese or I need this in Mandarin, then you would do that as a requested translation. There'll be a lot more information to come on that. I'm really curious for feedback on that at this point for Kevin and for Lindsay and I to just kind of get a sense of, you know, anything that you have, questions that you have, or suggestions on how we might go about doing it. But basically, we're expecting you to at some point receive a request from us to say, please identify the documents that you would like translated and please provide place a copy of that document, digital copy of that document in X location. And it would sort of start like that. Yeah.
So once we have these
points, it doesn't work. So
we get the forms back and they are supported in Spanish and they're going for this. And we get that back from them in their language about how is our staff going to have that translated so that we can assist them.
Yeah. So then what? For the people who are online, Susan's asking if we get something back that's been filled out, a document in Spanish filled out in Spanish or some other language, that what do we do with that? So we can then submit that for translation back into English, the whole thing. So you basically go through the process with the as though you were ordering a one-time translation of a document. It's just a completed document rather than an incomplete application. And so it delays like the service delivery. If you're not proficient in Spanish, you can't interpret the thing that someone's giving to you. It will slow stuff down, but that is better than no service or inaccurate service.
So are these documents before filling in electronically,
or are we handing them a piece of paper to translate back and a piece of paper that's going to be by hand? It's different than translating back documents being given. Yeah. So right now we're not converting to enterprise content management and electronic documents at the same time that we're launching this. So we're doing it in the manner that we've been doing it. So if people have fillable PDFs, it'll be a fillable PDF. If people have a hand paper copy that they're handing someone a consent form, it'll be a hand paper copy of a consent form. And I think some of it matters depending upon the service location too, because you may have, like, if you send it to an architect, they have computers, they're proficient at filling out online forms. That may not be the case with someone that's receiving services in the human service office or at a family resource center, right? So that it's going to be adaptive to that. So it will depend. But yes, it does create more paper documents.
Well, it's prior for it. It sends something for translation services to fill out by.
Yeah. You'll have to scan it and it'll have to be legible. That's a hard thing. Yeah. Any other thoughts or questions on that? Lindsay, do you have that? Oh, no, we have it in the packet. Everybody got a copy of this, which is the little information sheet that we preliminary information related to the phones. One of the key things related to this is that this document would cost $25.50 to translate. So it's not a small expense, is the point. That if you have, because it's by the word. So if this were completely filled out, that would be dramatic, like, you know, no white space. That would be a dramatically more expensive document. So there are budget restraints.
So we have to have that.
That's great, helpful, I think, especially for the customer service counter kind of thing, filling out applications, that sort of thing. Yeah.
I work with C, but we weren't doing that at the time. I mean, we work with agencies, we did that for us.
So anyway, more to come on the translation stuff, basically, is the key piece of information there. You will want to start thinking about that, because in around September, everybody will be asked, what are your key documents that you want to submit for translation? So perhaps pulling together a group in your office, or having it in your management group, or your counter service group, or whoever are the people that interact frequently and hand out forms, those would probably be the folks to talk to start getting a sense of what's going to be on that list.
Question: the scope really doesn't include employers.
It's not translating for employees, no.
Okay, the scope is outside.
Outside, yeah. And Catherine would be much better at answering or elaborating on that concept for me, but it's my understanding that we expect that people are English language proficient in order to hold a job at the county. No,
we do not.
Okay. Right.
So we've actually employed people that are non-native English speakers, and usually team them up with somebody that also speaks that language.
Okay. Right. Reasonable accommodations, right? Yeah. So that raises a great question. If an internal service department gets a request, they should coordinate with human resources. Because what you're basically being asked at that point is for a reasonable accommodation. And human resources should be aware of that and should be participant in those decisions and ensuring that we're providing what we should. Any concerns about that advice?
I don't know that it's technically a reasonable accommodation. It's going to be dependent on the job, because it may actually be a hardship for the employer in most of our positions, but there are positions where it will not be a hardship, and then we would make that accommodation.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that, because that's really what I meant. Doing that would be considered a reasonable accommodation, but in certain circumstances, it wouldn't be. It would be more than is reasonable.
Yeah.
For example, if almost all of our customers speak English as their only language, having someone in a customer service setting, having to have an interpreter stand next to them might be undue burden.
Yeah.
So that's it for translation, unless anyone has any other questions. Something that I have even less information on at this point is virtual multilingual services. So again, things like meetings like this, where we're having a hybrid meeting. So the Board of County Commissioner meetings are held hybrid. Somebody can come in here and speak, listen, engage in the meeting that way, or they can do it online. If you don't understand English, or if you're not proficient in English, you might prefer to attend online if we were translating it on the screen, if that were something that were possible through the technology and we were applying it. So we're evaluating those kinds of things, but I don't really have any answers for anyone on any of that yet. Any other questions about this topic?
Oh, there's a question there.
Question online.
Does each office pay for the phone minutes?
Great question. So It depends. The standard government answer is it depends. It depends upon where you're funded from. So right now we're going to absorb the costs into the county administration budget and pay for the phones going out and pick up the fees for the first months of service in 2023. Except we won't be doing that for health because they're already a customer, or human services. They're already a customer and they're paid through grants. So they pay their bills out of their funding that isn't general services money or current expense money. But going to be working with Susan, and we're going to figure out how we want to do it moving forward. The translation for 2024, I'm thinking we will probably put money into the county administration budget to pay the translation initially, but we may be charging back to departments that are having documents translated out of current expense that should have been paid or could be paid out of a grant. And then part of it is some of this might be more accounting than it's worth for minor expenses. But generally it will follow much like how you're funded now. So, Public Works is, you know, a lot of times is funded out of roads and other enterprise type funds. And they may pay for their minutes that way in the future. But the bills for all of the current expense departments would come into one location and be paid out of the current expense. Or we may make the decision for budget purposes and for sort of transparency in the budget that would actually, we will go ahead and have those allocated out to all the different departments. What's happening now is Language Line Solutions sends a bill to the sheriff's office, to health and to human services. And they pay the bills. And the sheriff's office is is current expense. So the money there is paid from current expense. The other two are paid out of grants, and the money there is paid from their grant funding. So the answer to the question that we got online is basically that, but more to come is probably the best way to answer that. Initially, you will not be billed for the minutes up front, but going into 2024, we may be doing that, and we need to, Susan and I, and we need to have budget conversation about what's the best way to do this. Do we roll it? Do we do that in 2025, or do we try to get that wrapped into everyone's budget like right now, which is obviously somewhat problematic, the plan for 2024.
So is there a set point, or is it just protocol for a minute? So if the treasurer's office didn't use it at all, we wouldn't have
to. There's no bill. Yeah, it's just permanent charges.
And they're mostly part of current expense. So they're, you know, unless we charged.
Yeah.
Right.
There's 240 languages that this company can interpret and translate for us. The top 13 are 74 cents a minute. So the sheriff's office used the whole entire year last year used 500 minutes. For $444 for the whole sheriff's office. So it really is not a huge, they were the number one user.
Any other thoughts and questions? If you have more, please run them by Lindsay or I. If you have comments after the first couple of weeks, if things come up related to the plan and equity and how are we serving various customers, Kanisha is probably the best contact for that, but she is on vacation until after the 4th.
I have a policy question I don't need answered today, but I'd like to have it come back. And it's really an HR policy question. As we diversify our workforce more and more, and we have bilingual staff that are stepping in, and we have some staff that are working towards certification as interpreters, are we going to have a HR mechanism to pay them for that extra skill set?
I think maybe your question is, would HR recommend that we have that?
Because that's a board decision. HR and said, I said, I want to send it to HR and have it come back.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was actually one of the things that kind of that topic was one of the things that actually made me really uncomfortable when I found that we had employees going from their office where they worked to a different location to now suddenly serve as interpreters for a couple of reasons. That is not what their job is. So that's the first big reason. And then the other being that they were not necessarily qualified translators. We don't really know, right? And our interpreters, qualified interpreters. And then there's the other, then I also think there are other issues related to, you know, privacy and things like that, that person may that not necessarily need to be privy to that information in any way. And so there's a lot of things, but Catherine and I have talked about it before when I was like, why are we doing this?
What was my recommendation?
Don't. And so, but yeah, I think you have a really good point that if we have people who can provide the service, are we going to have them authorized to provide the service? Are we going to ask them to do it? Are we going to pay them to do it?
So I'm not talking about what you just said. I agree with you. I think that was, in some ways, maybe an institutional failure to not have a language access plan in the past. That's just my thought. But I'm talking about where we have navigators or community health workers or mental health specialists, and it's in the purview of their job. And in order to better serve our community, we're hiring bilingual personnel to do that work. So the question that I am curious is to come back to the board is those positions, just as if I'm certified mental health provider, CMHP. Sorry, I was going to get to the right acronym. You get a bump for having certain certifications, right? So I'm not talking about people doing this outside their job description. Now that we're implementing this language access plan, there should not be people running downstairs to do this.
Right.
That's part of this goal. I'm asking about a policy that, as part of our work, as we diversify our workforce and we have language appropriate service delivery in certain departments, which we are doing, how does that fit? And it's not a question I'm looking to answer today. It's a question I think I ask out of it's part of our equity resolution, right?
Sure. Anything else? I don't have anything else.
And mind if I do a around the room since we have the time and see if there's any questions, just because sometimes round robin gets at stuff that we don't necessarily get at. I found that really useful when you were facilitating the last conversation at roundtable. So I'm going to just do a check. I think I'll start here and go around and not with one of the shyer people in the room is my first bit and say, Commissioner Bacon, do you have anything to add? Catherine?
No, I don't have anything.
Sean?
So with the budgeting, would it be helpful to add essentially a line item to anticipate increased expenditures for implementing this language access work in 24? It'd be easy enough to do as we're doing the budget right now. So that's clarified in our grant funding.
I would say if you're currently using the product, then you certainly should incorporate it into your budget. I think that this next year might be an experiment on how much we're using it, which would be really good information to determine how we want to spread that cost. First initial thoughts, which I just made a couple of notes, is it could be part of an overhead fee for administrative type services, but direct cost for outward facing type services. So it will need to be further evaluated to determine the fairest way to split that pie.
Oh, would there be value in sequence when we have 10 documents that we're going to translate? Would that be kind of thing would be valuable to be budgeting for at this point?
I think if you like health and public works and certainly human services have those forms that will need to be translated, then yes, probably should budget for some of that.
Can we just budget generally in admin? I mean, we don't call it out along with many other things that we don't call out.
And that was kind of part of what I was thinking on that is if you were, for example, 10 documents, if there are 10 applications that are like one or two pages, that's probably $50 or maybe $80, something like that, to translate that. So then that's $500 or $800. It's in miscellaneous, yeah. Right? Yeah. So it's, I think a lot of it is that trying to figure out, like Susan said, that it's like a fact-finding year in a lot of ways. We're going to learn a lot. Like, is this a very big expense or is it a minor expense? My guess is it's probably not a huge expense. If we start translating the comp plan into multiple languages, it's going to get very expensive very fast.
We translate the entire Island County code.
And another piece of it that I didn't mention in the virtual services side of things is documents that are online, how effectively are they translating, is something also we're going to look at. So that's where we really want big documents to be translated, is there where it's kind of free, in essence.
And as long as we're doing the demand. Right.
You just mentioned the Island County code, and the code is of course online, but it's in a different kind of a format in a different place. Is Island County code one of those that is translatable, you know, with our new website?
Well, it lives on
it's a different Municode.
Yeah, it lives on Municode, so it's not our website. And I honestly, I don't know the answer to that question.
I think that's worth looking into. Yeah.
I mean, Google Translate should translate it, but it is worth looking into for sure.
Just, we want to be careful that with Google Translate, which is not always as accurate, that you don't end up in a legal kerfuffle.
Connie, do you have any questions?
Yeah, related to that, I think IT had pointed out earlier that if it's a PDF, it won't translate on online. The document has to be converted basically to a web page. And then something unrelated to this particular topic, and I'm going to throw it out now, is a citizen stopped me after the regular session today and said she would really like to get email bulletins about any grant applications the counties make so that the community can hear about them up front. And they can say right away, we don't like that thing that you're applying for. So when the money comes in, don't take it. So just, we can talk about that at a later time, but wanted to have it out there.
Linda.
I have too much to add for 2 to 3 minutes, and it's all budget related. So well, you all know what I'm talking about.
I'm not on the table. I'm asking, is there any more questions you have on
it? I do not.
LA.
And Kevin,
John.
Yeah, I just notified that we've had in room 116 for the last several years, we've had several small pieces of gear over the weekend or something to be aware of.
Yep.
There are in some cases, what we did is take small objects and keep them in IT.
So to those online, because John, you're both quiet and you don't have the mic in front of you. John's thinking about where we sometimes have things go walking. Maybe we'll, like room 116, we'll have them checked out so that folks can keep track of them. Given that I just walked away with the keys to the blue building I was supposed to turn in yesterday. Sometimes that happens. Christina, do you have any questions for Michael while we're finishing this up? Or anybody online, in case you've walked away, because I thank you, Christina. Sheila, how about you?
I have nothing.
Thank you, Sheila. Sarah?
I'm okay, thanks.
Thanks, Sarah. Okay, then it's just round the table. If anybody, I'm going to start this time online. If there's anybody online, Christina, Sheila, or Sarah, that you want to do a quick update on our round the table updates?
Sure, I'll go first, I guess. So we sent out our value notices a couple weeks ago. I'm sure people have been receiving those in the mail. We sent a majority of them out except for new construction, people who had permits, and our personal property accounts, so business personal property. And overall, the county went up about 10% in value. So that's everybody. So both islands, not as much as last year, but it was still an increase. And they have until July 10th to appeal their values, and then we'll start working on the next set of values.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any updates? Sarah, any updates? Was he doing exciting things? Okay, we'll let him go. Anybody in the room, any round the table updates?
Kevin.
A couple months ago, I introduced we went over the request form. And I implemented the changes that were requested and sent it out to everyone. But I also put it on the bottom of the communications page. It's marked internal. If people didn't bookmark it, like I suggested, it's another place to find it.
It's on our intranet?
No, it's on the communications, the external site at the moment.
Intranet is going to be going away this year, so try not to put too much on anything on there that isn't already on there.
But SharePoint?
SharePoint.
But to be clear on that, because we got a really weird question sort of today on something like that, it doesn't mean there won't be an intranet site. There will still be an intranet site. It will be hosted on a different platform. But I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I don't want people to walk away thinking there's no intranet site. It's going to go away soon.
I can't find it.
On the page?
I can't find the
county administrator.
Kevin can probably help you with that after the meeting. Does anyone else have anything around the table?
Next month, my dad turns 92. And so I will be physically not here in the office the second week of July, but I'm still going to be available virtually. So.
I do have some time. You had something?
On July 28th, we'll be, I'll back up just a little bit. We have already done the upgrade to the financial enterprise system, one solution, and all of the users, people that use it regularly, have been trained. Recordings of the training are available to people who want more training. And all users have access to, this is in the test environment right now. On the 28th, of July, it will be moved from test to online and go live. And so that's a heads up to everybody. We'll probably, you will be reminded several times before we actually switch it over.
Sarah Berquist just sent a little note to us that everyone, don't forget the Whidbey Island Fair, July 27th to the 30th. Thank you, Sarah.
Public Health has a booth for, I think, all 4 days, and we have a few slots with some openings. So for external facing departments, if you have any staff that would like to join, we've got space available in coordinate.
I have just a couple of things on budget. I did push out the employees through ClearGov in the personal budgeting module. I've asked all departments to take a look at their staff that are coded in there. One of the things that I didn't realize until this morning is that you didn't have the ability to export your list for better reconciliation. Those departments that have more employees, it makes it a little more difficult. We can do that for you. I thought you had the ability, but we're happy to send you that list in Excel so that you could take a look at that. We have done a lot of programming edits to the program so that the coding flows through to the employee. So that's by position. Finance Enterprise and ClearGov are not identical in their coding for position numbers and seat numbers, so individual employees. ClearGov is coded by individual employee position so that I could code that detail into it. We plan to transition the new PCNs and job numbers to Finance Enterprise, but that will happen after budget occurs. And we're also, we've pushed the date for the budget due date to July 7th to allow for that reconciliation to happen.
anything else.
So those PCN numbers are also going to be accurately reflected in NeoGov after the budget process. So when Susan can work with us on that, so that all of our software is lined up. Right now, Lisa's finishing attributing the class specs in NeoGov to the department. So you don't have to go through and search 8 million different class specs. You can actually just put the department in and it'll pull up all of the class specs in that department. And then we'll be cleaning it out also as we go for class specs. Like we have a fair number that have never actually been used. So, yeah.
So we didn't have a roundtable this year that focused on preparing your budget. Is everyone okay? Or is everything going well with people getting their budgets ready as far as you know, Susan?
Well, from our office, we're getting a lot of questions, and Cher has been crucial in going out physically even to offices to help people with their budgets. But we do see a lot of work occurring in the product, and I think it's going well as far as I can tell.
I think it's a really big lift because it is new software. We're using some of the modules that we hadn't done before. And so to populate those for the first time, some of those pieces, it's a lot of work. And it's while we're doing other pieces of budget that aren't physically in the book, it's just been a very busy spring. Mm-hmm. And I don't anticipate it will be as heavy a load in the future.
Yeah, well, a lot of this will roll from year to year with minor edits.
Yeah. And product looks great when we get there.
Just right.
We're still, you know, doing everything in Excel. Mm-hmm. Just start.
Do it twice.
Yeah. And so it does feel like we're doing it twice. That's what we're figuring.
I think part of it is getting used to it too. Mm-hmm. We're all learning a whole new way to do the budget. Mm-hmm. And so that will smooth out over time as well.
This year is very mechanical, but I'm interested once we get this mechanical change, which is, you know, a lot, like you said, it's a heavy lift. It's a lot of input. It's change is never easy. But the advantage to this was the storytelling that we hope will emerge at the touch of, not really quite the touch of a button, but seriously, that in some ways a much easier way to tell the story of what Human Services does, to tell the story of what happens in Public Works or our different departments. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I do think it's important to say thank you, because I know that, you know, Jamie and, you know, your staff, probably you are doing a lot of extra heavy lifting this year to get that data entry done. But I'm optimistic that it'll get us to a new place. And I won't be surprised if I still have staff across the county, if we still have folks who are keeping spreadsheets for their online input. Because it makes us all feel better to know.
One of the nice things about this is that if you wanted to convert your online to Excel.
You can download it to a CSV file.
Yeah, and we did that actually so that we could do some analysis of mm-hmm. specific objects. So,
that's exciting. That's exciting. Anything else? Well, then we are adjourned.